Lane Kiffin alleges some SEC coaches don't want to play in the SEC championship game due to the risk of missing the playoff. We're going to break it down. We preview Notre Dame hosting Army at Yankee Stadium. Going to talk some Florida Ole Miss, too. And Joe Mixon shines against the Cowboys. Told you. Check it out and more on Crane & Company. What's up, everyone? Hope you're having a great start to the week as we race toward the back end of the week. Make sure, it doesn't matter how you're listening to us, you leave us a five-star review and please keep sharing the show. Do conference championship games matter anymore? Well, from the view of getting a first-round bye and a top-four seed in the college football playoff, hell yes, they do. But Lane Kiffin mentioned earlier this week, is the risk worth the reward if you're on the bubble? Well, since we don't know if the committee will penalize you for losing, regardless of what they say in the press, it's almost impossible to know the answer to that. But one thing I do know is this. If your team has never won a conference championship in their current league, like Ole Miss or Texas A&M, it should still matter a lot. Now, if you're Alabama or you're Georgia, who's won the league many times, maybe it's not as big of a deal to you, but in my opinion, it should still matter. If you don't make the conference championship game and you don't win the national championship, you've basically won nothing. Now, I get that you don't want to seem soft or afraid because you don't want that to bleed down your team, but it doesn't matter if you like Kiffin or not. The job of a head coach is to view all the scenarios, good or bad, for their team. And once again, since the committee has no rubric or methodology when it comes to their rankings, it is scary out here. These coaches are truly flying blind. Even Kirby Smart said it after the game last weekend. Now, do I think it's a good idea to go tell the media this as the head coach? Not really, because it doesn't help your team, and you want your team to focus on all their big goals game by game. But I don't blame Kiffin for thinking. Indecision is downstream of leadership. And by not knowing how your project will be graded, taking the cautious route does make sense. But once again, having no rules or guideline creates the type of indecisiveness on your path forward. So let the players go line up and play, control what they can control, and aim high. But coaches do have to think about these things because, like it or not, this is the reality we are living in with this playoff committee. David Cone, he lives in reality and was a quarterback at Michigan. My brother lives in reality sometimes. He also thinks he's a dragon on Fridays, former Western State, Colorado wide receiver. David, as a guy who has a get off my lawn segment each week, I think I know where you're going to land on this one, but I want to hear it anyway.
Actually, maybe this should be tomorrow's get off my lawn. Maybe I should expound on that. But before then, I find this mentality soft. I really do. Now, I do want people to understand, I get the strategy from the other point of view. I understand saying, well, hold on, we don't want to risk another game when people are sitting at home, so we'd pick up a third loss and not make the college football playoff. But by that line of thinking, you're acknowledging that the college football playoff is more important than your own conference, which is different than what I've heard from SEC fans for the last 30 years. I've heard that the SEC championship is the national championship. I've heard that that trophy means more than the national championship trophy. And for teams and programs like Ole Miss or Texas A&M, like you brought up, or even throw in Tennessee right now, none of those programs have won an SEC championship this century. I would think that the grand sum of your ambitions is not to make a college football playoff in a year when it's tripled in size. I would think you would want to go have an opportunity to be the king in the most dominant conference. Show me a team that is scared to pick up that third loss, and I'll show you a team that's already been beaten when they get to the college football playoff. And I'll give you this example right here. This is Alabama captain Tyler Booker when he was asked about this subject, and this is from our friends over at The Next Round. First and foremost, this is quote, first and foremost, we're super focused on Oklahoma this week. That's what we're worried about. But our program values, our pyramid of success, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Alabama wants to be in the SEC championship game. And when we get there, we want to win it. Do you see? Do you see what makes them different? That's why Alabama can't be beaten. That's why they've been the gold standard in the conference. And so, to me, there is methodology in this year's college football playoff. For the first time, we have a little bit of methodology. Do you want to be in the postseason? Yes, then win your conference. It's that simple. If you win your conference, you're in. If you're on the outside looking in your own conference championship game, then why should you criticize the committee for being on the outside looking in of the postseason invitational? I don't get it.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I was, you know, so upset that Florida State didn't get in last year, because they did win their conference. They did hit that marker that should have allowed you in there. We know there's extenuating circumstances, but still it is what it is. Blaine, I 100% fully understand a coach sitting down in a coach's meeting, or even after the season is over, coming out in the media and saying this. And I know Lane Kiffin, one of the best parts about him is he's very honest. He's going to tell you how he feels, and he's very transparent. I'm all for transparency. But to me, him coming out and saying this, I just don't understand why you would do it right now when Ole Miss is fighting for their life, and we're going to preview the game they're about to go play in Gainesville. You shouldn't be worried about this. Just like Matt Rhule shouldn't be worried about not counting the Michigan game from last year because there's a quote-unquote investigation still going on. You don't need to be worried about all this. You need to win the rest of your games. You need to get your team as prepared as possible. And we know that this Ole Miss team has showed a lack of maturity at some points throughout the season. And Lane Kiffin got off social media for a whole week after something similar to this happened earlier. I just don't know why you would come out and say this, because, look, it's true. But this is something that needs to be talked about to coach, and then maybe after the season, go to the media and say it. I just don't know how this makes you looks good, even though he's right.
Yeah.
We don't know. They can come out and say, we're not going to penalize you. It's just going to be a reward. But I don't trust anything that comes out of there, just like I don't trust what comes out of Russian television.
Well, and especially for Ole Miss, Russian television is really good. How many SEC championships have Ole Miss won?
None.
I looked it up earlier. It was six, but not since the
SEC championship game,
which is the early 90s.
And they tied LSU in 2003. Mm-hmm. They were co-West champs, but didn't play in the SEC championship game in Atlanta. And obviously, we're referencing the championship games.
So I think it can be soft and true at the same time. And, Jake, we kind of talk about this when it comes to college basketball. You know, especially we talk about Auburn last year. Auburn won the SEC championship and then didn't really get anything when it comes to the tournament. I mean, you're sitting right next to UConn. So what it comes down to, will the committee penalize you for this? Do you think the committee is going to penalize teams if they lose their conference championship with three losses?
I've got no idea.
I think it'll be circumstantial.
It will be circumstantial because all of it's circumstantial. But therein lies the problem. The reason there are these questions is because we have no idea. Now, you can sit here and say, oh, well, we've never had a 12-team playoff. There's no precedent set. I'll use Florida State as an example once again. They won the ACC championship last year and did not get in. So if I'm a head coach and I'm sitting here thinking, oh, my God, well, if they're going to penalize the team because of an injury that won the conference championship game, what are they going to do if we lose the game and go 10-3? It's a very simple fix to me. You treat the conference championship game as a reward, not a punishment. Mm-hmm. And when the team that loses that becomes 10-3, you treat them like they're 10-2 when you're looking at all the other teams that are 10-2. I think it's that simple. But the committee doesn't do what's simple, right? They're going to do what's beneficial to them and what's beneficial to the pocketbook.
I agree.
Okay, so one of the things I was thinking on that is rematches are an interesting point on this.
That's what we were talking about yesterday.
Two teams are meeting in the conference championship for a second time, and you pick up your second loss to that team in a season, I think that's more telling than if you're picking up your first. That's why I said that I think it's circumstantial. Now, one way around this is you could just go ahead and give the Power Four teams, make the winner and the loser, make the college football playoff. Then you have your group of five teams, so that would leave three at-large spots. Then you'd have coaches who want to desperately go play in their conference championship game, right?
That's true. And they'll probably expand the playoff using that methodology here soon, especially when
But then the winner still gets the bye, so there's still a reward for the winner.
So there's an incentive for it. I'm fine with that. And to me, that makes sense because it's concrete, right? It's concrete. This is how we're going to do it. These are the two teams that are in, and then we're going to look at the rest of the at-large spots. This is how we're going to look at it. This is the rubric we're going to use to grade it, regardless of who you are, what brand you are. This is the rubric we're going to use. So to me, I don't mind the thought about it because as a head coach, you do have to think about it. I do question the execution and why you would say that this week when you're about to go play a game in a hostile environment with a quarterback that is gaining more confidence in DJ Lagway and your team should be focused. I think if Ole Miss wins out, there's a really, really good chance that they're going to get in. I don't know. You know, we can look at all the tiebreakers, the SEC championship, this, that, and the other. I think their strength of schedule is going to hurt them at the end of the day when they look at all those together. We put up our rankings yesterday. You can look at the SEC standings. I'm just not a fan of coming out and saying this right now, at least, at this point.
I think the real question on the college football playoff is, like, what do you want to see as fans? Of course, we all want to see the best competition play against each other. But that's the phrase that's so often used that muddies things up, which is, well, no, it's the best four teams. And then we have this whole argument and conversation about who gets to decide the best four, and we have a bureaucratic committee. Basically, what I'm getting at is every single March, we see a team who I've never even heard of before. You have someone like Fairleigh Dickinson upset and beat a number one seed, and we all love that. And we claim to love that anyway. But before that happens, we complain that they shouldn't have been in the tournament in the first place. This year, a great example of that is Indiana. Well, Indiana's about to go get their shot against the Buckeyes, the number two team in the country. They could lose by 50. Maybe they'll win the game. Maybe they'll win by 50. I really don't know. I think they're good. Let's see what happens. But everyone claims to love that story, but then at the same time is hoping that they lose by 60 points so that Indiana, that magical story you've claimed to love all season, doesn't make the college football playoff. So I'm just wondering, do college football fans actually love college football, or are you just hoping that some other team from the conference that you play in, even if it's not your team, makes the postseason?
Well, yeah, to me, that's circumstantial too. Like, if I'm a Texas A&M fan, I want Indiana to lose by 1,000. But I mean, if I'm an Auburn fan and we got no dog in the fight, I like a good underdog story, but I also love college football and I want to get the best matchups possible. And like you said, the term, we want to get the best 12 in there. Well, I mean, yeah, but like, how do you get the best 12? That's easy to say. Like, I want to be the best person I can possibly be, but I got to know how to do it to get there. So to me, when I look at it and we look at this 12-team playoff and you got the automatic slots and you got this, if you're going to be wrong, at least be able to explain to me in a consistent manner of why I think you're wrong, but I saw how you got there. Just show me. It's like a math test. Show me your work. If you can show me your work, whether I agree with it or I don't agree with it, I'm fine with it. But I think we can all agree that a loser in a conference championship game should not be penalized for that.
No, I do agree with that. And what we talk, I'm just thinking about this in real time, so I'll ask both of you guys this. We've talked for years about, well, we want to get the best four teams in the college football playoff. Now we're talking about we want to get the best 12 teams in the college football playoff. Do we want to get the best two teams in the conference championships? Do we want to get the best two teams? Because I don't see Kirby Smart. Kirby Smart's come out last year and then this past week saying, well, Georgia would be favored against a number of teams in the country, so just go ahead and automatically put us in the college football
playoff.
Well,
that was the argument last year.
I don't see him coming out and arguing that we would be favored against every other SEC team, so just automatically put us in the SEC championship.
Well, but that, again, is why they made a move on that. They got rid of divisions. Now, I think every conference should have the same amount of conference games. So there's a baseline we can all operate off. You have the same amount of non-conference games, same amount of conference games. But when you got rid of divisions, that's what you were trying to do. So we didn't have a situation where, you know, Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State are all in one division. And there's only one rep. And we've seen it go back and forth in the SEC too. Some years the East is better and dominant. Some years the West is better and dominant. But at least they made a move to try and do that. So I can appreciate that, because I do want the two best teams in the conference championship. I would have loved to see Ohio State and Michigan play twice, you know, in the years where it mattered the most. Or maybe Penn State's in that other division and they get to play one of Ohio State or Michigan again. So at least they made a move to do that. With this whole situation, I just don't feel like we're making a move to do that. And at the end of the day, they don't really care because they're the ones that are turning the keys from their ivory tower.
All right, you ready to get to the chat? All right, chat, hit that like, hit that subscribe button. If you donate, it's on topic. It will get read and we'd really appreciate it. We're going to start the day off with Chad. Chad, what's up? Says, fellas, it won't matter in a couple years anyway because conference championships will go bye-bye with a 16-team playoff.
Here's where I understand that line of thinking, but here's where I disagree. The conference championship games make a ton of money. A ton of money. You look at hosting it in Atlanta. Not that Atlanta needs all the money, but they make a ton of money. And it's a big deal. What you're going to see happen, I think, is when you go to a 16 playoff or beyond. Because once you get past 16, I don't know how you can sit here on one hand and say, we care about player safety, but we're now going to make you play 20 games in a season. Those two things can't exist together. So what they're going to do is they're going to say, you know what? Everybody played the same amount of conference games, and we are going to eliminate one game from the regular season because we played 11-game regular season schedules for a long time. They're not going to take a slice out of the money pie in the conference championship game, including the conference commissioners like Greg Sankey, Petitti, and these guys. They're going to take a game out of the regular season. So for all those people that were worried about the expanded playoff watering down the regular season, you were right to be worried, but you were worrying about the wrong thing. It's not going to make the games less important or less enthusiastic. It's going to actually eliminate a game from the regular season. That's what I think you're going to see happen.
Well, I think that that most likely will be terrible. Obviously, unless they're picking from a non-conference matchup, then that's the worst case scenario, and it will weaken the conference championships even more. Because at least right now, the winner gets a bye.
Yeah.
But at 16, you won't even get a bye. So you can say, well, the number one seed will play the 16th seed, but that's not as good as having a bye week.
It's just like a March Madness region, 1 through 16. It'll go just like that, and there won't be a bye. So really the incentive of actually winning the conference championship game is not going to be as high as it even
is
right
worse.
Now with the 12.
That's why 12, I mean, this was my whole problem with going to 12 was that we hadn't even, people were calling for this before we even played one of the 4-team playoffs out 10 years ago. Remember this? Now we hadn't even played a 12-team playoff and we're already talking about going to 16. I mean, Tim Brando has been on here laying out exactly how it's going to happen for 6 months now.
Well, we went to first base and skipped second and third. Like we started out holding hands. Now we're having a kid. Like what happened in between it? There was no in between. And now, again, when you see the returns that come in on these games, because they're going to be great. Mm-hmm. The games are going to be incredible. The atmospheres are going to be nuts with the home team hosting the first round. It's only going to expand. That's why I wanted to go to 8. So if it did expand, it could go to 12 and then maybe 14. But now since we've gone to 12, you tripled it the first time. What's going to keep you from doubling it this time? What's going to keep you from adding 6 teams and going to an 18-team playoff or whatever the hell it's going to be? That we don't know.
Let's go to Rocky Top T. Says anything which even slightly incentivizes mediocrity or shying away from competition is inherently not good for sports. So it's sad that teams/coaches/programs are weighing in on not playing.
Great comment.
It is a great comment. But again, I don't want to disavow a coach for having to think about this because this is the reality. Like, as a coach, I would want to know, not that I'm going to go tell my defensive line room this, hey, guys, we don't want to play in the conference championship. And you did that basically by coming out in the media and saying it. But in a closed room, talking to coaches, you'd be like, man, guys, we know if we finish 10-2 with the way it looks right now, we have a really, really good shot of getting into the playoff. And we don't want to give them any other reason for us not getting into the playoff. Not that we don't think we're going to win. Not that we don't want to go win. But that is a conversation you need to have behind closed doors. I'm more upset that we have to have that conversation, not that the conversation's being had.
Let's go to Zach T. He says, conferences need to be smaller instead of larger. You should have to play every opponent in a conference so all schedules are fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just, again, that's not a bad idea. I'm going to go ahead and tell you, the conferences aren't getting smaller. That's not going to happen, but I can see what you're saying. All right, one more.
All right, let's go to Rico 7. He says, does this mean Notre Dame should join a conference?
Well, I think Notre, and again, there's the business side of it and what's best for Notre Dame, and then there's the side of it for college football, and I want what's best for college football, so I think Notre Dame should join a conference. But right now, it's doing them. I mean, they're not in a bad spot when you look at the way that it's shaken out. Now, what's going to happen when we go to the Super League? They're going to have to join one. They're not going to be able to dangle out there as an independent in the Super League because it's going to be split into two conferences. So eventually it's going to happen. But from a business standpoint, Notre Dame, as far as an independent, they're the hottest girl at the dance by 1,000.
All right, let's go to Reggie. What's up? It's a simple solution. Winners of the conference championship get the buys. Losers get to host the first round of the playoffs, then fill in the rest of the teams by the AP rankings.
Well, that's what I said, and that would hurt Notre Dame even more.
Yeah, it would.
Because now you're talking about not being in a conference. Now there'd be 8 spots that are taken up. But again, that's where I'm like, look, I can get on board with the idea that the second best team, the loser of the Big 12 championship game this year, may not be as good as the 6th best team in the SEC. I'm fine with that. But I'm also like, at some point, we have to have at least some objective metrics that we can go off of, which is why I like the idea of the conference champions getting not only into the playoff automatically, but having the bye. I can't believe it's led to the fact that you have some coaches out here who've never even won the SEC think about not even going to play in the SEC championship game.
Yeah, well, I agree with you 100%. Well, if you're thinking about which coffee company is the best, there's an easy answer. You don't have to worry about any playoff committee. You don't have to worry about winning a conference championship game. All you got to do is head to blackriflecoffee.com right now and use code DAILYWIRE to get 20% off the best coffee in America. They've got a ton of great roasts. They've got light roast, they've got dark roast, and everything in between. They even got a coffee quiz on their website to match you with the perfect Blend, and every purchase you make helps them further their mission to support veteran and first responder causes, which is the most important thing that they do outside of making delicious coffee. Everything from getting funding and equipment to first responders to helping veterans get medical care. And we know that's so important to so many people and so many families of people that protect our country. And every purchase you make with Black Rifle Coffee, like I said, goes to those fantastic causes. So your money is going a long way toward giving back to those who serve our nation. And again, the quality, they got espresso, they've got all types of stuff. Head over to blackriflecoffee.com right, well, after the show. Check it out and use code DAILYWIRE. Get 20% off. You're going to be amazed when you see the selection over there. Like, they're not just over there making like some just one dark roast and a light roast and throwing you a little bit of an espresso. Their bag is super deep when it comes to coffee. Believe me, we know that's what's in the tumbler right now as well. But speaking about deep, woo, Swamp's going to be deep this weekend, fellas. David, Florida, Ole Miss.
Yeah, so right now the line is -10.5 Ole Miss. Looked like it opened right at -10, 55.5 on the over-under. Like you said, this one's going to be in Gainesville.
And I've had, you know, a bunch of Ole Miss fans, you know, reach out to me and they're like, you know, how worried should we be? You know, what do you expect to see from Florida? If you were going from the perspective of having the worst Florida team possible to you to, for you to face as Ole Miss, obviously, having the third string walk on would be the best situation. But that's not the reality. That's not where we're standing right now. DJ Lagway is going to play. And I know there's a lot of Ole Miss fans that are nervous because the way Florida played against LSU. But let me tell you why I think that was such a positive thing for Ole Miss. Now there, even if there was a chance that this Ole Miss team was going to overlook Florida, which I don't, even though they have had some maturity problems as far as taking each opponent seriously. When you look at what happened against Kentucky, we can go down the list, what happened at the end of that LSU game. Not that they didn't take them seriously, but now there's no hiding it. Florida's a problem. DJ Lagway's a problem. And I think this is going to get Ole Miss's full attention. A, it should anyway. You're playing a football game and your life's at stake running around. B, you cannot lose another game or you're out of the playoff, right? And you have a better team than they do, but you need to understand you've got to go in there and play well and play clean. But so from an Ole Miss standpoint, I think Florida beating LSU could actually be a big positive because now I don't have to manipulate you into thinking Florida's good. I don't have to go in there and trick you into thinking we're going to have to play our best game. You can turn on the tape and watch DJ Lagway. And here's what the scariest part about DJ Lagway is and what the most exciting part for Florida fans about DJ Lagway should be. DJ Lagway is not just running around out there out-athleting people and trying to figure it out. He beat LSU from the pocket, really, which means two things. One, he knows what he's looking at. And two, his timing is really, really good. He's a nuanced passer as a young player. Now, he's got a lot of growing to do, and he will. But he didn't have to go out there and run the ball and run around and find ways to create and turn these crazy plays in. One, because his hamstrings hurt. But also, he understands how to play the position. So if you're Ole Miss, when you look at this Florida offensive line, when you look at the way this run game has kind of come on, you are better than Florida is up front with your defensive line to their offensive line. What worries me for Ole Miss is Florida's defensive line to their offensive line. Look at where Ole Miss has struggled during the season. It's because that offensive line has underperformed most of the time in the biggest moments. Now, against Georgia, they didn't, and Ole Miss is really, really hot right now. But if you're Florida, you're going to win this game because if you're going to win this game, it's because DJ Lagway was able to stay in the pocket, go through his reads, get the ball out in time, replace the blitz with the ball, take his shots downfield, and actually play the quarterback position. And then on the defensive side, if Florida is going to win, it's because they shut down the run game, including Jackson Dart, and they get Ole Miss in the 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. But right now, I tell you what, I think Ole Miss is playing as good as anybody in the country. I think when we look at complete teams, there's a great argument to make for Ole Miss right now when you compare the offense, the defense, and the special teams playing complementary football. But LSU losing to Florida the way they did, it wasn't a fluke, it was an ass beating, I think is going to get the attention of this Ole Miss team, and you're going to get a really good version of Ole Miss that shows up in the Swamp. One reason is because of that, too, it's because their life's on the line.
I agree that if Florida beats Ole Miss, it's going to be because they were better than them on that day. It's not going to be because Ole Miss looked past them. And I think this is a great game for Ole Miss before we reach the end of the regular season because you're playing against solid competition that sort of keeps that edge. It keeps you really focused and awake. But at the same time, it is a winnable football game because of what's going on in Gainesville. I think that the way that that Florida defense pressured Garrett Nussmeier a week ago, that would give me pause. You know, I mean, like the way they got after him and the way they protected DJ Lagway. And DJ Lagway, for a freshman quarterback, he gets the ball out of his hands so quickly. He understands pressure, and combined with the fact that just physically he has a quick release, which I'm a big fan of.
He's a big guy, too. He's a bigger guy.
Yeah, so 10.5. I mean, look, it seems like a lot of points given what we've seen from Florida at the Swamp. You know, coming off of a big win, this team took Tennessee to overtime. Right? This team fought with Georgia for at least, what was it, 2.5 quarters, maybe even 3 quarters before that one kind of got out of hand. I do like the under 55.5. You know, it could turn into a shootout or at least maybe on the Ole Miss side, but I like under 55.5. What are you thinking, Blaine?
Well, surprise, 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 another SEC game that's going to come down to who wins up front. I mean, you look at Florida's front seven, they're pretty damn good. They've been pretty damn good the entire year, but I still believe in this is a different type of Ole Miss team this year. All right, this isn't the Ole Miss team that's going to have to outscore you to win football games.
Agreed.
Ole Miss can get to you in the pocket. And I will say this about DJ Lagway. This kid as a freshman has an extremely high IQ.
Yeah.
Extremely high football IQ that you can't teach. He is the future of Florida, but right now I'm liking Ole Miss in this football game. This isn't LSU. All right, this isn't a team that can't turn around and hand the ball off and go get 4 and 5 yards. Lane Kiffin, Jackson Dart, and Ole Miss, they know how to do that, especially with Paris Jr. at running back. So I'm leaning Ole Miss in this football game. I think they have more weapons. I think from a play-calling standpoint, I love Lane Kiffin in these type of football games, even if it's at Gainesville. And, Jake, I go back to your point. Ole Miss won't be surprised by Florida. They'll be ready for Florida and what they bring. Give me the Rebels, and if I had to bet it, which I won't, I like Ole Miss to cover.
Well, and another thing here, one of the things that the pressure did for Florida against LSU was it simplified things in the back end because a lot was happening early. It didn't have time for routes to develop. LSU's got some pretty good players on the outside, but they were never able to get into a rhythm. I think Lane Kiffin understands and is going to have kind of an escape plan, an escape hatch, whatever you want to call it, a fail safe to where if they are giving up pressure, being able to get the ball out quickly, whether it's a short screen game to the wide receivers, whether it's quick game, whether it's even intermediate passing game with Jackson Dart to be able to maybe supplement a lack of a run game if it is there. Now, on the Florida point, we always talk about this when it comes to Florida because this has been the biggest bugaboo with Billy Napier. How clean are you going to play? Mm-hmm. Like, how many penalties are you going to have? Are 12 guys going to show up on the field on punt on 4th and 4 and give Ole Miss that extra possession that loses you the game? But Florida's also been hurt with busted coverages in the back end. Now, the system they run has been pretty complex. I know they've done some things to simplify it and adjust it. But if you're going to bust coverages in this game, Lane Kiffin is going to gut you with the wide receivers that they have. Seems like Harris is healthy, that he's going to play in this game. You look at what else they have around him and the way they use the running back in the passing game as well. If Florida goes out and plays clean, this is going to be a 4-quarter fight. Ole Miss is still probably the better team and is going to win the game. But if Florida goes out there and busts a couple coverages and they get these penalties, this game could actually look a lot more like the Arkansas game than what some people are thinking.
And if we want to sit here and talk about special teams, look, that Trey Smack kid for Florida, the kicker for Florida, can hit it from anywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere. And as a coach, especially Billy Napier, to have that confidence in a kicker, especially at home, to at least go get you in 3 points. If I'm Florida in this game, obviously you want to beat them up pretty bad, but you at least want to be walking into a one possession in the 4th quarter at home, all right? And if you're Ole Miss, like you need something good to go early. Because at the end of the day, this is still a 5-5 Florida team. Okay, if you get up 10-0, 14-0 against this Florida team, I'm going to see how these fans react.
Yeah.
All right, and if you can take the crowd of it, then it's kind of a little bit more smooth sailing down the road.
I'll tell you another interesting storyline that I don't think will have a ton of impact on the field, and that's the fact that the rumors that Florida was trying to court Lane Kiffin away from Ole Miss to come be their head coach. Mm. I don't know where the discussions got. I don't know if they contact the agent. I don't know how much impact it'll have on the field. I just know you got a coaching staff over there and you got a lot of players who now know Billy Napier is going to be the head coach next year who said, that's the guy y'all wanted to bring in? He's coming into the swamp.
Let's go prove
he's coming into the swamp. I think they're going to be as prepared as they possibly can be, and they're coming off of a great win. So if Ole Miss goes in and wins by 20, I think they will have earned every bit of that.
And don't be surprised if you see that rear its head on either side, if either team is up big late and maybe punches one in late, whether it's Billy Napier wanting to drive the stake through Lane Kiffin, the guy that people wanted to replace him there, or it's Lane Kiffin looking at Florida saying, yeah, you were right. I really am him. So don't be shocked if maybe there's not a knee taken. or maybe there's a timeout taken when it didn't need to. Because this in this game, I haven't seen Billy really do that, but I know Lane will do it. If he feels like it's personal, I 100%.
I'm going to ask her this. How big will Jackson Dart's legs be in this football game?
Oh, well, they're always going to be huge because they dictate how I defend you. And if you're Ole Miss, just like we talk about with Alabama, there's no excuse not to run Jackson Dart. You can't sit here and say, oh, well, we don't want him to get hurt for the playoff. Well, if you lose this game, you're not going to make the playoff. So if it's working, if they're keying in on the running back or maybe the defensive end to the weak side is overplaying it and the quarterback can keep it and run, I think more of Jackson Dart's running ability is going to be when the play breaks down and he gets 4 yards and gets out of bounds or gets 6 yards or it's 3rd and 11.
Or still throws it.
Keeps his eyes on the field and still throws it. Or it's 2-man and everybody's back's turned on 3rd and 11 and Jackson Dart scurries up through the pocket and is able to go get 12 yards and then sliding at the first down. I think that's going to be where he could hurt them more.
See, that's what I thought in the Georgia game. I thought that his legs to keep plays alive where he still throws the football down the field after he's escaped the pocket would be a huge factor. It wasn't really because they didn't need it because they stayed on schedule against that Georgia defense, which still shocks me. I think a large part of it will be how much does Florida get after him? Does Florida have 3 sacks at halftime?
And do they have to pressure to get after him? Or can they just go with 4 with this offensive line that looked good against Georgia? Can they continue to do it? But let's get to the chat.
Let's go to Mason Palazzolalo. God, I said that wrong, but Mason, at least you're on here. He says, Ole Miss defense wins the game. It's only that offensive dumb decision that lost Kentucky and LSU. I trust Ole Miss's offensive line.
Well, I was with you 100% until the last one. I'm a trust but verify now with this Ole Miss offensive line, and it's a great test for them against a Florida team that the strength is the front seven.
All right, let's go to JC. He says, do we trust Florida's O-line against the Ole Miss defensive line? The Ole Miss defensive line looking a little bit nasty this year.
No, I don't. I mean, I think this game's going to come down to which defensive line is, you know, I know this is an obvious thing to say, is able to stop the run and at least pressure the passer into making mistakes. So you got 2 front 7s that can really, really get after it. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch whether or not, you know, how many times they blitz, how many times they run stunt, or can they just get there running peanut butter and jelly?
All right, let's go to Robert M. What's up? He says, weakest portion of that LSU team is the O-line. Inferior to the way the University of Ole Miss plays on the offensive line has been playing of late. Right now, if you had to pick one, Jake, do you take Florida's front 7 against Ole Miss's front, or do you take Ole Miss's front 7 against Florida's O-line?
Right now, That Ole Miss's offensive line is playing, I would take Ole Miss's front 7. And listen, this is obviously I've been gassing up Florida's front 7, but Ole Miss's is right up there with anybody in the country when it comes down to depth, not only rushing the passer, but stopping the run. I would take them, but by a slim margin. It's not long at all.
All right, let's go to Gator Jim. He says, do you think DJ Lagway will win the Heisman at the University of Florida?
He's got a great chance to. It's just, can the pieces around him play clean enough, and can Florida get out of their own way? Because if you look at the schedule that Florida has to play next year too, he's going to get a lot of opportunity. Yeah. And the better he plays down the stretch, the more hype there's going to be going into the next season. But speaking about hype, remember the phone line's going to open here at 10 minutes. Hit that subscribe button. Thanks for everybody being in here. Let's talk about another game that we didn't know would have this level of importance, and they're playing it at a baseball stadium, Tony.
Notre Dame, 9-1, playing undefeated Army, 9-0, playing in Yankee Stadium. The line right now is -16 Notre Dame. It's come down a point from where it opened, 44.5 over under there. I know that you're already on record for saying that Army is going to go ahead and beat Notre Dame, but why don't you give us the keys to victory? And keep in mind, the last time Notre Dame played a service academy, Navy, who was unbeaten this year, that one was 51-14 off of 6 turnovers, I think it was.
Yeah, and Navy, you know, and you got to give credit to Notre Dame. They played really disciplined. The Army and Navy teams, they were both undefeated, but they're not the same to me. Army is a very old team. Notre Dame is older as well. But I don't think Army is going to make the same mistakes from a turnover standpoint that Navy did to allow Notre Dame to build a lead that Navy could not surpass, that they had to get out of doing what they do and start trying to throw the ball and getting all creative and this, that, and the other. So I think Army is going to play clean enough to stay in this game. I know that spread is really high. And we've talked all year about how this Army team is kind of innovative in the way they run the triple option. Right? You're seeing them, you know, do more things out of the gun and throwing the ball and having that capability. But when you look at the numbers, guys, they're still running the ball 90% of the time. Like, you can't forget to dance with the one that brought you. So Army's going to try and establish a run. But I think there's a fine line if you are calling the plays for Army in trying to overdo it to outsmart Notre Dame and getting away from what you do best and doing it just enough? How many times are you going to throw on first and 10? How many times are you going to take a shot on third and one, knowing that fourth and one's not going to be that easy against this Notre Dame defense that is very well coached up and showed you they know how to stop the triple option? But here's where I lean on Bryson Daly and his ability as a leader to be able to make plays, because they're not going to be scared of Notre Dame. Now, make no mistake, Notre Dame has better players than they do. And my biggest worry is not just Army's ability to be able to move the ball and maybe getting too cute on offense, which could lead to turnovers, could lead to third and eights, which they can't live in the style of offense they play. It's Army's defense. Because when you look at the numbers, Army's defense is really good, guys. Like, they're giving up like 11 points a game. Like, it's they're really, really talented, and they tackle really well in space. But Notre Dame, even with the injuries they've had on the offensive line, is a lot more talented than Army is up front. So at the point of attack, can Army get away without having to throw every single person they have to stop the run, including Riley Leonard running the ball, which is his best thing to me still, even though his arm talent is pretty good. He hasn't shown a lot of consistency. Because if you do that, you're going to have to play man in the back end. And if Army has to play man in the back end, you are one bad step, you are one broken tackle away from that going 80 yards. And as good as Army's offense has been this year, and as better as I think they are than Navy is, they cannot get down to this Notre Dame team. So the start of this game is massive. Can you live in third and threes? Will you get too cute, or will you just be cute enough? I think this Army team is not going to turn the ball over. Don't let them get in the fourth quarter with a chance. Do not let these Cats get in the fourth quarter with a chance, because they're going to beat you.
Blaine, Notre Dame beat Texas A&M on the road to open the year. They lost to a Northern Illinois team that is now, what, 6-4 in the MAC? And since then, I mean, they looked great, blowout wins, but we're talking 49-7 over Stanford, 31-13 over Georgia Tech, 51-14 over that Navy team we were talking about, 52-3 over Florida State, 35-14 over Virginia. But I'm wondering, and look, I love Jeff Monken, man. He did some great things in Statesboro when he was at Georgia Southern. Can this Army team really play with Notre Dame, or is this just sort of some fool's gold where Notre Dame moves forward?
I mean, this sucks to say, but I think Notre Dame's going to roll these guys.
What's rolling them?
Like, you're going to cover the spread. I think this will be a 20-plus point game. I just don't think Army has enough. I don't think the way Army's built, you can beat a team like this. I just don't. If you get behind early, which I think they will, it's going to throw you completely out of what you do from an offensive standpoint. Then you're going to be pressing, and you're going to do things you're not used to. And that's when you look up and you're down 27. I think this Notre Dame team is going to be too much. Riley Leonard, love it running back. They have a couple good pieces. Their offensive line banged up, but still good. This is the Notre Dame team we're going to see Saturday. And look, I love our service academies, all right? I love them so much. And trust me, I want Army to win this football game. But I look at them in no way. I don't think Army's going to push them around up front on the offensive line. I just don't think you're big enough. And I think Notre Dame has the size in the front seven to stop you guys. And if you take Army's right hand away, they have nothing else. They have nothing else. And Notre Dame can dribble with both hands, with Riley Leonard running the ball, Riley Leonard throwing the ball. And Notre Dame's defense has looked good this year. So it sucks to say, I don't want Notre Dame to win this game, but I do think they win this game, and I think they cover.
Well, Army has to be the counterpuncher in this game. They have to be the counterpuncher, because I don't think they're going to be able to dictate and just attack and attack and attack. What do I mean by that? That means you're going to have to have a lot of counters built off of your tendencies and what you do best. And that's great, and that's what you want to do. Because the whole reason you run the triple option is to slow the defense down, give eye candy to the defense. But they're very well coached up. Marcus Freeman, we saw what they did against Navy. So where is the line, if you're Army, in counterpunching enough off what you do, but not getting away from what you do? And when do you do it? On that first drive, are you going to start running counters to what you have been doing out of the same look early and see if it works to maybe get you back into doing what you're able to do, because they're worried about, oh no, he's going to reverse out, they're going to run the triple option the other way. Are they going to run a reverse off this? Or it's going to be a reverse pass off this? Or they've been 85% when they're on the right hash and they're in this formation, they're going to run it into the boundary, and all of a sudden they do opposite things like that. It's not just about trick plays. Or do you go about it the other way? And if your Army say, you know what, we're going to do what we did that got us here until they show us they can stop it, and then we're going to counter. To me, I think you counter first. That's what I think you do. I think you come out and you throw the first punch. Right? You don't sit here and just play with them and play with them and play with them. I think you go out and you run a couple of those counter plays off of what you do best early. See if they hit. So at worst, If they don't, you can at least go back to what you do best and what you know. And if it does, now you're out early, which does two things. It doesn't get you behind where you're having to do things you don't normally do. And two, it lets Notre Dame know, guess what? We're here to play and you don't have us pegged like you had Navy pegged. That's what I'm looking for. That's where Cody Worsham, the OC, is going to make his money. That's what I want to see.
So when you say you expect Army to counterpunch, you're not talking about they need to respond to Notre Dame in the game flow. You're talking about scheme?
Scheme. Okay. They need to go early. I think you go against what you've done a couple times.
Okay, interesting. See, I thought you were talking about they need to counterpunch basically like, hey, Notre Dame's going to dictate the pace and the style of this game, and then you punch back based on what they do.
No,
which
no,
is
no.
what I thought Arkansas might need to do last week against Texas. That was sort of a game plan, which... Look, it could go that way. I think it needs to be more. If you were forming a template for this, it may need to be a little bit more of what Vanderbilt did against Alabama. That wasn't a counterpunch game from responding. Vanderbilt set the tone of the game, and Alabama sort of got caught off guard with an assumption, well, of course, we'll come back and win. It's just closer than we think. And Vanderbilt just never let up with a 41-minute time of possession, which this Army team can hold the ball like that. I just saw him hold it for 13 minutes in the fourth quarter.
But Vanderbilt could make those short throws consistently out of that diamond set. That's what we're – not that Daly can't. But we know Pavia had the running ability, like is a good runner. But he could also make those short throws in the window where, you know what, God forbid if we run it on first and second down and we're in third and six or we're in third and seven, you've got a lot better chance of being able to throw it and get to the stick. The amount of stick routes that Vanderbilt ran in that game was insane. I'm shocked Bama just didn't squat on it, even if they were in man coverage. I just don't know if Army has that escape hatch.
Look, you can say what you want about Vanderbilt. Those are SEC football players. Okay, and we talked about this all the time with Services Academy.
Well, how big of a difference do you think
can they have big enough guys to push Notre Dame, who probably outweighs them all by 50-plus pounds?
Which isn't their fault. Sometimes it's dictated by the Service Academy.
For sure,
especially up front.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And that's what Army's – that's what they do.
And nobody goes to Army to play guard in the NFL.
No. And no one's saying that. The only reason we're talking about it so much is because they're legitimately a really good football team with great football players and great coaches. Like, Jeff Bunkin can coach. The thing, to answer your point, is if they can't throw it well enough in the intermediate game or in any part of the passing game to, like, stay alive in the way we're talking about against Notre Dame, then not only do you have no chance to win this game, but you have no business being in the college football
playoff. I agree with that. And we're going to, kind of like Indiana, we're going to find out this weekend against Ohio State in a weird way. With Army, that's kind of the same situation that we're finding ourselves in. But it doesn't matter what offense you run, you want great American-sourced meat in your refrigerator, in your deep freezer, in your freezer, or whatever. And there's only one good place to go. And yes, their name is Good Ranchers, but the product is fantastic. And it's a pretty awesome name, by the way. And by the way, between the holiday chaos and the questionable meat quality at grocery stores these days and prices, we know preparing that perfect meal can feel overwhelming. That's where Good Ranchers steps in to transform your Thanksgiving experience. And they got all type of stuff. I mean, we've sat here and talked about it a million times. The chicken's fantastic. The steak's fantastic. The Wagyu beef is absolutely incredible. But they're not just delivering meat. They're delivering peace of mind because every cut comes from American farms and ranches, which means it's owned by American families like mine and like yours. If you're on overseas, listen, you can get it shipped over there. I promise it'll be better than anything you got, too. And they're free from antibiotics and hormones. And right now, guys, Good Ranchers is offering a hell of a deal. Subscribe to any of their premium meat boxes, like the butcher's one. Trust me on that one. And they'll add a free Thanksgiving ham to your first delivery. We're talking about a 10-pound spiral-cut chunk of deliciousness. All right, that's $110 value. Absolutely free, and you can trust where it's coming from. Just go to goodranchers.com, use promo code Booster, all right, and you'll get that fantastic deal at checkout. Use that code, get your Thanksgiving ham, support American farmers, skip the chaos at the grocery store, and make this holiday truly special with Good Ranchers. Goodranchers.com, use promo code Booster. All right, I want to get to the chat, but first, it's Tuesday, which means we got Huddle Up. Let's get into it, Coney.
All right, huddle up, Georgia fans. Let's get in 13 personnel and go bunch right overload. Blue 28, Ted, why slip? This was the second touchdown by Georgia against Tennessee. Let's set it up here. We got second and goal from the 4-yard line, and we often say an offensive coordinator makes their money in the red zone. So let's break down what Mike Bobo dials up here, and we're going to start talking about personnel and formation. So Georgia comes out in 13 personnel. That's one running back and three tight ends. Georgia, one of the few teams in the country that can run three quality tight ends on the field at any time to set up run or pass. And they're going to line up here in an overload formation. So that's a tackle standing up in the bunch formation to the boundary and our third tight end attached to the field. So at a critical goal line moment in this ball game, Georgia comes out and shows the defense something they haven't seen before. This helps create some initial confusion for Tennessee on defense in terms of where to line up. And from there, Carson Beck gives a great play fake on the toss into the boundary, which allows tight end Oscar Delp to get lost there against man coverage in the back of the end zone. This is a great low red zone beater design here by Mike Bobo, and I wouldn't be surprised if he dials something up off of this design later in the season, maybe in the SEC championship or in the college football playoff should Georgia make it. This is 13 personnel, bunch right overload, blue 28, Ted, why slip?
I tell you what, that's like an old school style dirty trick play. Like, to me, that's about as innovative as Mike Bobo is going to get. And I've created a term for this, Dave, because it's such a great breakdown defensively. I've created a term. This is called an overeducated bust. Mm. Like, do you ever study for a test so much and you're worried about one thing and you study that thing so much that all of a sudden it happens and you kind of on the fly, you forget about something simple that you should know the answer to? Here's why this is genius. Because defensively, if I smell a rat, I'm going to find the rat. What looks different in that play? If I know that your tackle's reporting is eligible and he's in a wide receiver stance, guess who I think is going to get the trick? Guess who I think you're going to run the trick play to if it's there? There, you can see them. They're like, hey, that's different. This isn't right. Something smells funny. And by doing that, they were so focused on that, they missed the guy running wide open right behind him who normally catches the ball. And the smartest part about this from Mike Bobo and Georgia's standpoint isn't just that you stood the offensive lineman up in a stance, is that he didn't run a route.
No, he's
so talking. It froze him because if he would have run a route, you could have accidentally ran into the right coverage and got that guy in the back end. But this is an over-educated bust at its highest. It wasn't that Tennessee was prepared. They were prepared so much they smelled the rat and lost the simple thing. They thought the rat was in the kitchen and it was actually sitting on the couch next to him the whole time, David.
Yeah, and the toss sweep fake into the boundary is what's great to me because you've been seeing that more and more in recent years. I mean, the common thing was if you're going to run a toss sweep out of a traditional shotgun set like that, well, you'd run it to the field because you have more room to work. So we've seen more and more play callers running that into the boundary off these weird bunch formations. You fake that to slip the tight end behind in the low red zone where space is so constricted. I think it was a great play design, and that's why I thought it was worthy of this week's huddle up.
Yeah, it was absolutely nasty.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Mike Bobo's nasty. Look, I think that's about as creative as Mike gets.
That's it. That's as out there as he gets.
I miss just toss sweeps. I just miss them. Back in the days, Georgia used to run the hell out of them back in the day. LSU used to do it.
LSU used to run the toss sweep and let the quarterback lead block.
Yeah.
Which that was
the good old days.
Say what you want. All right, let's get to the chat for one or two, and then let's get the NFL and then calls.
$10 donation from Steve Miller. Appreciate it. It says, being a combat veteran from the Navy, I wouldn't normally go with the Army, but I'm not that stupid. Notre Dame is and will always be a tough team.
Yeah.
I think Notre Dame ends up kicking that ass.
Notre Dame's most likely going to win, but I told you guys I'm riding with Army all the way through this thing, and I'm not going to let when they got the Screaming Eagles 101st Airborne Unis honoring Bastogne when we whipped Germany's ass like they stole something from us because they were trying to. I'm going to ride with the boys. Give me the Black Knights.
All right, let's go to $3 donation from the Canton Army. It says, Jake, does this need to be a high-scoring game or a low-scoring game for Army to win?
Low. Low-scoring game. It needs to be a low-scoring game. Why is it low-scoring? Because the possessions are limited. If the possessions are limited, it's for a reason. It's because Army has the ball a lot.
Yes.
Like you mentioned with the Vanderbilt-Alabama game, I think this needs to be a low-scoring game for Army to have a shot because they only have so many bullets in the chamber of making big plays, right, when you run this style of offense and against a team that is athletically better than you. So if this game gets above, God, what do you think, Dave? 23, 24, they're in big trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
maybe even above 20 if you want to make that argument.
No, I agree with you. That's what they need if they want to win the game. That's why I don't know how I feel yet about the 44.5 line because Notre Dame has been scoring a lot of points. I don't know if Army's going to be able to keep the ball.
But and as far as betting like Notre Dame or Army, you could take, you know, Army plus 17.5. Army could get dominated in this game and lose by 17. Because of the limited possessions. Like, Notre Dame could dominate them and only win by 17 in what in a normal result.
And run it themselves. Run it themselves. That's why I'm working. Now, Riley Leonard has been throwing the football a lot better.
He has been throwing it better, but, you know, again, that's in this game, I think Notre Dame's early, it's going to be Jeremiah Love And let's
Michigan second half against Penn State.
Yeah,
last
let's
year.
Let's find out.
Yeah,
I was going to BR. He says Army did hang with Michigan and Oklahoma a few years back. Those were big Big 10, Big 12 players that did not push around the Army players. Look, Blaine, I'm just saying.
Well, it's and again, I you know we can look back. I mean, this is just such a different team. This is just such a different time. Army's going to fight their ass off. I do know that.
All right, let's go to CD. Says, Blaine, those are not SEC players from Vanderbilt. Those are transfers from New Mexico State. Get your facts right.
Yeah, well, technically they're SEC. All right, let's get to the NFL before we get calls. A little best and worst. And, Blaine, how about we start with you?
All right, we doing best or worst first?
Let's go best first.
I love this guy. They come out in zone. We bang a couple threes. Next thing you know, they have to come out man, and from there on, it's barbecue chicken. Please bring Josh Allen up in this game. Yeah. Trust me, they don't get it. But if you watch TikTok, you will. 4th and 2 against the Chiefs. Look, the thing about the Chiefs, I love them and hate them at the same time. I like seeing the Chiefs lose. I don't know why yet. I guess that'll be for another day.
Because they're so good.
But 4th and 2, baby, run this play so I can get emotional. 2 minutes, 7 seconds left on the clock. All right, pump fake. You know what? I'm not even worried about it. Put it on my shoulder.
Go, son.
Put it on my shoulders.
Go, son.
Off me. You're little. Bam. Oh, get in the end zone. Josh Allen, hashtag the truth, hashtag the great white hope, hashtag yes. Please save us from the Chiefs. What a play. If you watch this full game, man, Josh Allen, apparently one of the biggest trash talkers.
Oh, yeah, I believe that. He's got some Philip Rivers in him. Gives a whole new meaning to is your refrigerator running joke. I will say the cool thing about this is that typically this is the reverse of what happens. Typically the Bills fight the Chiefs, and the Chiefs are in these games, and the Chiefs find a way. Patrick Mahomes, whether the officials bail him out on a pass interference call or something, or Mahomes throws one behind his back while writing a poem to win the game. It's kind of weird to see it on the other foot, and Josh Allen and them finally broke through. Is this something we could maybe see manifest itself later in the year in the playoffs, which is where the Bills...
January and November are different months.
That's exactly right, but this is a really good momentum builder. My best, I'm going to take it back home on this one. Former Auburn and Oregon quarterback Bo Nix with the Denver Broncos. Sean Payton identified him early in the process, really liked him. You know, he wasn't one of the highest rated quarterbacks in a really deep quarterback class. You know, a lot more was said about Drake May and Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, and rightfully so. But Bo Nix is a great example of when you put somebody who has the ingredients in the right situation. And I know the Broncos are 6-5. I'm not saying they're 8-4, and I think Jaden Daniels is still the rookie of the year. But Bo Nix's maturity and his athletic running ability, I think, is somewhat slept on. You talk about extending drives on third down with your legs, but he's also smart enough, Dave, to throw the check down. Maybe that's what happens when you get to play in college for 30 years, but I'm really excited to see Bo Nix, who's a hell of a person. Used to have him on the show all the time, comes from a fantastic family, grew up in a football family. He is the perfect fit for Sean Payton, and the Denver Broncos should have a lot of hope going forward. And I think the younger players are going to continue to grow with him, Troy Franklin and these other guys as well. So really excited for Bo and his
I am too, man. He's putting together a heck of a season, and he's validating Sean Payton's decision to move on from Russell Wilson and to go after
a lot of haters out there on Bo Nix. I know three guys who weren't hating on him, so they're going to be a pretty damn good NFL quarterback, and I believe they're on this set right now.
I'm proud of the kid. My best, I'm going to go with last night's game. How about Joe Mixon and the Houston Texans? I know the Dallas Cowboys, things are ugly in Dallas right now. Very bad. Worse than they should be with how many good players are on that team. But the Texans, 7-4 right now. Joe Mixon had 109 yards on 20 carries, 3 touchdowns. Did you have him 2 touchdowns?
I had him
yesterday?
2 touchdowns and said he'd score the first touchdown and the last.
Which
touchdown.
He did.
Buddy.
And I had him on my fantasy team. He scored a 40-piece with Cajun Fries. Had another 54 yards. No, excuse me. Had another 44 yards through the air. And I think I saw a stat that's 5 straight away games that Joe Mixon has rushed for over 100 yards and at least a score. I think is either an NFL record or has tied him for an NFL record. So the Texans really putting something special together. I don't know if they're going to recreate the magic they had last year. Yeah. Too many penalties right now, but a good in-state win for them.
No doubt. And it's all falling apart in Dallas, including the roof before the game. As far as Joe Mixon, off the field stuff aside, we all know what happened with him in college, and I hope he's really grown from it and learned from it, and I hope he's taken action to help domestic abuse and survivors and stuff like that. But I think we can really start to make the argument now, and we'll see how the Texans finish, that Joe Mixon could have been the best signing, right, of a player to a team, an up-and-coming team, because this is a resurgence for Joe Mixon, guys. Joe Mixon isn't a rookie. He didn't come out of nowhere. It was kind of going downhill a little bit where he was, goes to the Texans, and now he's the main man. So happy for D'Amico Ryans. Happy for that group as well and the Texans. And listen, I'm not the biggest Cowboys fan. I just hate it for their fan base. As crazy as they are, this is really, really tough. And Jerry Jones has put them in a really bad spot. All right, let's go to worst. I'm going to start with my worst. This is a penalty. I want to bring this clip up. This was a penalty, and I want to go through it. I get that you want to protect the players, but you cannot sacrifice the sport for the protection of the players. Let's go ahead and play this clip. This makes me sick. Go ahead and play it. Watch this hit. So nobody hits him in his head. Now, we can talk about shoulder, head area, all this stuff. This was a clean hit by two guys to me. They're sandwiching them. Shoulder, shoulder to your shoulders. Not up on the top of your shoulders, but to the side of your shoulders. What am I supposed to do? What in God's name am I supposed to do on defense? Am I supposed to look at the guy next to me and say, no, 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 you hit him. Or, hey, let's just grab him and hold him. I understand player safety. I want the players to be safe. I want NASCAR drivers to be safe. But when your ass is driving 200 miles in a circle, sometimes you're not going to be safe. And nobody is forcing anybody to play in the NFL. And these guys make a ton of money. So if there's targeting, if there's unnecessary roughness, if a guy's launching with the crown of his helmet, which is dangerous for him and the offensive player, I'm all for it. Throw the penalty. But we have now started throwing penalties. And this happens in college, too, for hard hits. That's what they look at. How hard is the hit? And even sometimes the hit's not even hard in college and we get targeting penalties. I'm just so sick of seeing this. I don't know how you coach defense anymore, but it's not going to be fixed. So I don't even know why I'm complaining about it.
Put flags on them.
Yeah. No, then I'm not going to watch.
Yeah, that's the only thing that'll hurt them. You have to quit watching. If they keep doing this, you have to quit watching. That's the only way around it. And I know we already talked about it today, but my worst, bring it up. Bring it up. Not only is it the Dallas Cowboys, but it's the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. There's something about watching America's team crumble. Look at this, Jerry. What are we doing? What are we doing? We spent all this money on something that doesn't work. It's only getting worse, and this is dangerous, buddy. Not only did one fall, three fell.
Yeah.
Three fell. And I want to talk about all the teams that have won in the Cowboys Stadium this year. Saints, Packers, Ravens, Lions, Eagles, Texas A&M, the Texans, the USA soccer team, the Canadian soccer team, and Jake Paul. You know how many home games the Cowboys won this year? Zero, yeah. Buddy. He needs to
go. Wow.
Look, Cowboys fans will tell you the same thing. It's time, man. It's time for you to pass the baton.
They've been saying it's time for 15 years. That man ain't leaving until they got to carry him out in a casket.
And then they're going to bury him under the field.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as no one rolls.
Am I going to have to become a Cowboys fan? Am I starting to feel bad for the Cowboys?
No, I don't. Why would you ever feel bad?
I don't want to hate the Cowboys. I don't want to hate
them. It's not about wanting to hate them, Dave, but they make you sad.
Blaine's like, I don't want to hate them either. I just do.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Chicago. While we're talking about bad things, the Chicago Bears. The Chicago Bears, that's my worst right now. 4-6, lost four straight. There's too many good football players on this team to be as bad as they are. And I understand that Caleb Williams is a rookie, but you've lost four in a row, and two of those games were to the rookie quarterbacks who got drafted after. Jaden Daniels, you lost to Washington. You lost to the Patriots as well with Drake May. You just highlighted Bo Nix, another rookie quarterback from this class who's doing good things in Denver right now. So, you know, you can't put it all on Caleb Williams. I don't even think you can put it all on Matt Eberflus. There's something with this franchise right now. You're last place in the NFC North, and the fact that you didn't even make a run at Jim Harbaugh. You didn't even make a run at Jim Harbaugh after he won a national championship at Michigan and he played quarterback for your franchise. That's wild to me. But look, they're stuck where they are right now. And the NFC North is we projected them to be the toughest division in football this year, but still, the Bears are going to have to figure out a way to turn this thing around.
Yeah, there's something deep-seated in there that's wrong. Because we talked about Caleb Williams is in a great situation because he looks like he's going into a situation where he has some help.
Added so many weapons on offense.
Yeah, turns out it's a life alert. Please, I've fallen and I can't get up. But if you want to start a business and you feel like you need life alert, well, guess what? I got a lifeline for you. Our friends over at Shopify, which our marketing team uses every day to sell our merch. We love how easy it is to add items, ship products, and track conversions. Guys, put it simply, if you're the heading a business or you want your business to run smoother and you don't want to have to micromanage anything and hand it off to somebody you trust, you need a great offensive coordinator. You need a great play caller. When it comes to merch, when it comes to everything that Shopify does, there's a reason that they have Shop Pay Now that boosts conversion up to 50%, which means way fewer abandoned carts and way more sales growing. If you're serious about growing your business, your commerce platform needs to be ready to sell wherever your customers are, whenever they need it, whether they're scrolling or strolling or even trolling. All right, we're talking about on the web, in your store, social media feed, everywhere in between. The truth is businesses that sell more sell on Shopify, and we are living products of that. And when you hear this noise, speaking of products, you just made another sale. Let's go to the bank and then go to the restaurant and buy something fancy and too expensive because we rich, y'all. And guess what? If you're ready to take your business to the next level, upgrade it right now and get the same checkout we use with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/CRAIN, all lowercase, shopify.com/CRAIN to upgrade your selling today. Go check it out. Once again, you hear this noise? Somebody call mama. Tell her we made it. All right, David, tell me when you're ready to go to calls.
All right, I'm ready.
All right, great job.
Let's go to Ben in South Dakota. Ben, what's going on today?
They got phones in South Dakota?
How you doing, guys?
Ben, what's up?
So I'm a Nebraska fan. They started out 5-1, kicked the crap out of Colorado, had Shadur throwing his O-line under the bus, and now they've lost four straight, staring at 5-5. They got Wisconsin coming up, who just fired their OC, and I still don't feel confident that they're going to win.
Well, Ben, it's one thing. If you're going to be bad, I'd almost you just rather start out bad. Like, say what you want about Auburn. I knew we sucked after we played Cal. So I had no high hopes about how it was going to go. Anyways, but for Nebraska, you know, we talk about Oklahoma State being a letdown. We talk about Kansas State being a letdown, Utah with Cam Rising and all this. I think Nebraska's been one of the biggest letdowns this year, not just where they sit and with their schedule leading up to Ohio State, but how they looked early. I know Raiola went down. I know that Matt Rhule is trying to make some changes. Bringing in Dana Holgorsen while yet still complaining about the guy that can't redshirt or whatever because of the Michigan game, which I think is totally ridiculous. But I am so disappointed in Matt Rhule in Nebraska this year. Because part of me drank the Kool-Aid. Part of me drank it. There's something about Nebraska I like, but I just don't know right now, even with Matt Rhule there, and I still want to give him the benefit of the doubt because I think he can figure it out. Y'all are really, truly going to have to prove it to me now. I am no longer going to be in the camp of expecting the best from Nebraska. Now, this week against Wisconsin, we'll see what happens. You know, there's some deficiencies on both these offenses, obviously. We'll see what happens with Holgorsen. But, Ben, I'm not a Nebraska fan like you, man, but even I'm let down by the way it's gone down this year for the Cornhuskers.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you guys this, but is Nebraska just the Auburn of the Big Ten?
Well, no, we won a national championship in the last
and then played in another.
In SEC championships. I think what worries me, and listen, it's all cyclical, is that Nebraska fans have been, you know, thirsty for this for so long, and I don't think that's going to change. But what would worry me is the exception or the resignation of accepting mediocrity. You know, maybe this is just who we are. Maybe we'll never be good again. And I know there's some Nebraska fans that have said that. I hope that doesn't set in, because the minute that set in means you're dead. But the fact that you've fallen off this far this quick after the Colorado game, it's disappointing. I'm not even mad. I'm just disappointed.
Yeah, the fans are still selling out games.
No, Nebraska fans always
You know, it's just, you know, Matt Rhule is supposed to be the builder. And, you know, why does our apartment complex still suck? It feels like it's getting worse.
Yeah, they just flipped Dawson Merritt from Alabama, so he can recruit.
Yeah, you know, but sooner or later you have to put it on the field, man. It's just, you know, and I go back to that Indiana game, man. It's just that was an absolute beatdown.
Well, and like Illinois, and I'm disappointed with Tony White too. We can talk about the offense all we want, but Illinois went to your house in like the 300 or 450th straight sell, whatever, and ran it down your throat. And punked you in overtime. So again, like, I'm not buying into the Kool-Aid. And this was the schedule to do it. This was the year to do it. You got a young, there's so much hype at Nebraska. You bring in Dylan Raiola. You've got a schedule where you pretty much should have been 7-0 going to Ohio State. And you know what? If you get your ass beat by Ohio State, that's okay. Go 9-3. But now all that hype has dissipated back into the sewer that has been Nebraska's success. And everybody's like, oh, well, here we go again. How's the hype train going to roll up again? It's just to look where Colorado is now and Nebraska is now after that game, I would have never seen that.
And I think another big question is, you got Dylan. Can you keep him? You know, yeah. That's what I'm worried about. Yeah.
Appreciate it, Ben.
Call, Ben.
Thanks for calling, man. All right, let's go to Gary in Utah. Gary, what's going on?
Yo, what's going on, boys?
What's up, G?
Hey, I just wanted to, like, talk about LSU. And so I saw the post, like, you know how you guys do the Sunday videos, mm-hmm. right? Like the post games. So I had a little different perspective, and maybe I'm just coping, right?
No, that's fine. Look, totally... dissent moves us forward, Gary, on the kick drum. Come, come, Gary.
Yeah. And so my perspective is, like, I think for the first time in his career, Brian Kelly's not the problem.
Really?
And here's my logic and reasoning. Defensive staff is new. They just got there in like March or April. They don't even have their own kids in there that they want to run their system. So that's going to take about another year, at most two, because like they came in, they took the current staff, and they're probably squeezing the absolute juice out of those kids on the defensive side of the ball. Offensive side of the ball, I'm a nobody, and if I can call plays better than Joe Sloan, Joe Sloan's got to go, right? Like, and I don't even know the ABCs of play calling, so that's bad, right? Like, you would think that an offensive coordinator would know that, like, hey, this is the personnel I have. These are their strengths, so therefore, let's do X, Y, and Z, right? He's trying to implement a system thinking that Jaden Daniels is still there, and he's not. Right. So you need a mobile quarterback. And that's why when I called like a month ago saying like, hey, do you guys think Nussmeier is in the right place? Not that I don't like Nussmeier. I love Nuss. I hope he stays here for the rest of his career. I hope he has that Joe Burrow-esque career. Right. But also at the same time, I want to see him do well and I want to see him eat. Right. And that's why I said, like, he's better off in a system with Lincoln Riley at USC, with Morgan Scalley at Utah. Right. Or how you guys mentioned Penn State. Right. And I'm like, okay, that's
so more pro style system is what you're saying.
Yeah. More like pro style system where I'm like, okay, hey, that's also a good fit. I didn't think about Penn State. Right. And so, but I'm also thinking like, hey, on the offensive side of the ball, like, yeah, okay, maybe you get a running quarterback in there and then maybe Joe Sloan is actually good. Right. So I think, and also when Brian Kelly took over, there was no recruits. He had to rebuild everything, re-recruit. He's been doing well on the recruiting side of the ball, right, on all that. And so do you guys think that that Brian Kelly effect, that quote-unquote year three and year four shifted to the right by like a year or two?
Well,
what do you guys think?
David, you take this one first if you want, because I know what I'm about.
Well, no, you go ahead. I want to hear it.
If this was number one, that – here's what I think, Gary, and look, I respect your opinion, brother, and I appreciate you calling in, and this is why this show works the way it does. The buck always stops with the head coach. Either you're coaching or you're allowing it to happen. Now, if this was year one, okay, we can have that conversation. Brian Kelly's been there. Even if it was year two, I could understand it a little bit. But Brian Kelly had to change his defensive staff for a reason, because he was wrong first. And in the transfer portal era, if you can't get the players, take out high school recruiting, if you can't get the type players that LSU should have to be at LSU in the transfer portal era, that's a you problem. And the buck stops with you. As far as offensively, now I'm going to take some of the pressure off Blake Baker because these aren't Blake Baker's guys. Blake Baker had to come in and try and change everything. So if you want to say somebody's not at fault, I would go Blake Baker. But as far as Nussmeier, I do think there is some elements that Joe Sloan is trying to be too much like Dembrog and treating him a little bit too much like a running quarterback. And again, the RPO has a running element in it. That doesn't mean the quarterback is always going to run it in the RPO. But I think LSU has a personnel problem on defense, and I think they got a toughness problem on offense. That's what I think. And those are both problems that Brian Kelly is having because he is the head coach of LSU, and he's got to be able to fix it. And I still think he can. I still think he can. But to me, I think it starts and stops with Brian Kelly. I don't think he is null and void of the criticism.
And I don't think it's been a great look either to see everything boil over on the sidelines. Mm. You know, Chris Hilton Jr., Kyron Lacy, and that's just, there seems to be something toxic going on between the players and Brian Kelly, at least what I've seen.
Well, that's what I thought when Kayshon Boutte was sitting there not putting his hands up a couple years ago to even catch a touchdown, and then LSU won the SEC West. And I thought, okay, well, maybe he is chipping away and getting that culture figured out. I don't know. Gary, before you go, though, I do want you to answer this. LSU sitting right now at 6-4, lost three in a row. You got Vanderbilt and Oklahoma to finish out the season. Will they get to 8-4? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay.
Barely.
Okay.
All right.
Gary, all right. Great call, buddy. Thank you.
Call in after that Vanderbilt game, okay?
For sure.
Thanks, man.
You.
All right, let's go to Thad in Kansas. Thad, what's going on?
Boys, I'm having an excellent day. How are you?
Ooh, I love
better
that.
Hey, I'm better now, yeah.
Well, the wedding I was at on Saturday, they had breakfast for the meal, so pumped about that.
Yeah.
Steelers won, destroyed my brother-in-law in fantasy. OU won their bye week, didn't make me sad, so I was pumped about that. My alma mater won, and they're potentially going to be in the Division II playoffs, maybe. And my reason for calling, wanted to get all that out of the way. Jake, you touched on it with the hit on, it was Schultz, I believe, and how clean and beautiful that hit was. And it jogged a conversation with my wife and I about these roughing the passer hits that are absolutely nothing, or the targeting hits. We think, my wife and I think, that if those calls get put out there, that the quarterback, the tight end, the wide, whoever gets hit, they need to go out and go to the blue tent to get checked out for one play. If we're wanting to protect our players or protect the players that much, shouldn't they go out and get checked out right after that scenario happens?
Well, you know, I really don't hate that. I've never thought about that.
I do.
Honestly.
Defensive coach.
Yeah. But again, you got to understand. I'll ask this question: if it's player safety, why don't they ever call it on the offense? It amazes me, because it's not like the offense doesn't do it. I see running backs do it every single game. And not only that, they lower their head to make the defensive player have to lower his head. So if you truly wanted it for player safety, it would be equal to both sides. Now, that would take longer and there'd be more penalties, right? There'd be more guys thrown out of the game in college. But I don't think that's the main reason why they do it. I think it is just another way to give the offense a first down, another way to take the stinger away from the defense, and another way to put that ball in that end zone, which puts that credit card on that Game Time app to buy tickets or watch it on TV. I don't think it's player safety. I think it's organization safety.
It's points.
I think it's financial security. That's what I think it is.
And defense always complaining.
Appreciate it, Thad.
Hey, they're Thad, quickly, you talking about a fantasy win. Did you make the playoffs?
I am leading the league right now. We got one more game.
There we go.
I got Mixon, Bowers.
Me too.
And the almighty Boswell. So,
we've got to show up.
And Bowers too, buddy.
Let's go. Brock Purdy's balling.
Got him late, too.
Absolutely.
Got him
congrats,
late.
Dude.
Appreciate it, Thad. All right, let's roll through these. I want to get to everybody. Let's go to Tyler in Florida. What's going on, Ty?
Fellas, how are we doing today?
Good.
Well, I was called yesterday. If I want to bring back what I was going to say yesterday. Y'all were talking about Dan Mullen. Does he coach defense by any chance?
Well, he was the head coach at Mississippi State in Florida, so I guess technically. But listen, you got to know one and know the
I'll
other.
That's anybody.
Talk about a personnel problem. I know Guidry knows what he's doing, and there's a method to his madness. But like, again, scheme is unbelievably important. I don't want people to think that I don't think it's important. But at the end of the day, it's the dudes. The dudes make the scheme. It's like the elves make the toys. You could have the best idea for a toy, but if Buddy the Elf's big ass can't make it, you're not going to be able to get it to the United States. So it is about the players. The players make the scheme, and they make the scheme better. There's something scheme can make up for. You can trick people a couple times, play to your strengths, and that's great. But it's about the dudes, whether it's man coverage, zone coverage, blitzing, or playing base. If I got the Jims and Joes and you don't, I'm going to pull your pants down and spank you in front of everybody at the middle school.
Tyler, is Miami going to win the ACC?
Oh,
are they going to prove us all
wrong? That's your answer right there. Did you hear Tyler?
I don't think so.
That really? Syracuse game.
Then who is SMU?
I'm sitting here watching the SMU game and the Clemson game the other day, and I'm like, I think I want to play Clemson. Wait, no, I don't. No,
you want to play SMU?
Yeah, you much definitely.
I want to play SMU. Then I'm like, maybe SMU, and then I'll see Smith take it like 60 yards. I'm like, okay, maybe I don't.
Well, I'm telling you, that Syracuse game, dog.
Gary,
we're going to see
that Syracuse game on the road. That over
score Syracuse.
Over.
I think, oh yeah, over all day. I don't even bet, but I would take the over on that. Which means the under's hitting. But that Syracuse game, I think we'll win out. I do. I don't see us beating SMU.
Wow.
Now that their defense is great.
Times are tough, brother.
But, they can stop us at least twice. I don't know if we can stop them.
Appreciate it, Tyler.
That's one guy we haven't talked about the Arkansas job either. See. Maybe Rhett Lashley wants to come home.
Somebody talked about it early in the year.
Appreciate it, brother. All right, three callers left, 3 minutes left. 1 minute each. Let's go to Jacob in Texas. What's going on, man?
Jacob.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up, dude?
Not a lot. Hey, just a little bit of just what your opinion on a college football playoff for the future, considering we were talking about how Ole Miss is talking, not wanting to play in the conference championship, losing out and everything like that. So I'm going to preface this. It's a 14-team playoff, so it ups two teams. I know we haven't played the 12 yet. Let's get through the 12. But for the 14 team, possibly, so the Power Four, winners and losers of the championship game, automatic in.
So that's eight.
The top two, yeah, that's eight. Top two winners get the automatic bye. So a 1 and 2 seed, essentially.
Okay.
And then a combination of either the group of five top champion or the highest rated independent get that fifth seed.
Okay.
And then the rest are the at-larges, so that's five, I believe. You take the highest ranked of the last five to get in. If you have that weird 10-2, 11-1, 9-3 combo where we have a bunch of them at the same, then you take the highest the winning percentage of all opponents, not just conference opponents, but all opponents. And then the top five from there get the best seed there.
I mean, I don't hate it, but did you say the group of five gets an automatic rep and the independents get an automatic rep?
No.
Just
the
one.
Highest ranked group of five or the highest ranked independent.
And you said they get the fifth seed.
Well, that extra.
They get an automatic bid, but the seeding can be different.
Yes, the seeding can be different. They get the automatic bid.
So basically, you just took the 12-team playoff, added the conference championship loser, and kind of kept the same format, cut the byes in half, and only gave it to two teams. Am I reading you right there?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
At least you have a method to how you're going to get to the at-large bids. Hell, at this point, Jacob, I'll take that.
Expand the playoffs just to get more SEC teams in. I'm all for it.
Thanks, Jacob.
This is pretty much the BCS.
Let's go to Noble in Fort Worth. What's going on, Noble?
Hey, what's up, guys? Back again. You want to go for Auburn A&M or Y Conference Championship? Do or don't matter first.
Whatever you feeling, buddy.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, the conference championship point. I think Lane Kiffin's actually the perfect person to speak about this, and I can't believe I'm actually backing him up on this because Ole Miss is essentially blocked from getting in the conference playoff. I mean, the conference championship. And so I think a lot of things would have to go for them to even be able to get into it. But I think the whole point of Lane Kiffin saying this is that everyone's talking about it. Like, we've all been, I think, thinking about it, kind of some murmurs, but now it's really out there for the committee to really have to think about. I think the committee needs to have a definitive statement on this and, you know, come out on what way, you know, what is the consequence of losing in your conference championship game? Are you going to get punished for playing that extra game? Because I'll tell you this, like, as an A&M guy, I want to win our conference. We've never won the SEC before, but there's a, Lane is the perfect guy to, you know, say this out loud because I'm sure other coaches are thinking this too.
I just don't like doing it when your back's against the wall and you're Ole Miss in these last two games. You need to be focused on blocking and tackling and stopping DJ Lagway. You don't need to be worried about whether you're going to get penalized for playing in a conference championship game. Well, in my case, I think it's the exact opposite, Noble. If you don't have a chance to play in the conference championship game, why the hell are you worried about this?
That's fair. I just think, like, if anyone's going to speak this, it's going to be Lane because, you know, he's going to run his mouth about anything.
For sure. I see what you're saying.
Who knows? Maybe they lose because of Florida, because of this.
Yeah. I'd be worried more about Florida right now if I were him, but I'm not him. But appreciate it, Noble.
Noble, thanks, buddy.
Thanks, man.
All right, let's get to a last caller here. Brett in Bakersfield, California. Brett, we got 20 seconds. What's up, man?
I got a quick question for you guys. So if Army beats Notre Dame, Boise State wins out, and then you look at the Big 12, Arizona State has a small chance of winning the Big 12.
I know where you're going.
Arizona State wins the Big 12, and Army and Boise are the five highest-ranked conference champions. Boise State gets a bye, and Army takes over that final automatic bid for, like, say, the 12th seed. What would happen with the Big 12 then?
Well, I still think the Power Four conferences are going to be the top four seeds, but Arizona State, you know, obviously would still get in. They just wouldn't be able to earn the bye, whoever won the Big 12. I think maybe the crazier question is there a possibility, is there a world in which the Big 12 winner has like three losses or something to where two Group of Five team gets in?
I think it's possible. It's not likely. Obviously, I think Army would have to win and then Boise State would have to win out. There is a common misconception I've seen going around the country that just not getting that bye means that you could risk not making the playoff entirely as a conference champ, and that's not accurate for the Big 12. So if Arizona State moves forward and wins the Big 12, which Kenny Dillingham had an awesome video.
That.
I don't know. I got it from one of you guys. I'm not sure. That video was incredible. Then they will be in the college football playoff. The question is, do they have to play a first-round game, or does someone like Boise State, who the committee had already ranked higher, or an Army who they would have to go and jump after a win over Notre Dame, did they get a bye rather than one of the Power Four conferences? It's possible. We'll see.
Yeah, and then the Power Four conference is like that Group of Five at large bid that gets it fifth. And then what happens with Notre Dame if they lose to Army? So it's going to be wild down the stretch here, Brett.
Jumpstart your January goals at Whole Foods Market. They have hundreds of yellow sale tags for feel-good savings across the store. Explore sales on sustainable wild-caught sockeye salmon fillets, organic boneless chicken breasts, and many more quality finds to support your wellness journey. In fact, Whole Foods Market is the only certified organic national grocer. Shop Whole Foods Market with so many ways to save all month long. Terms apply.
Yeah, thank
appreciate
you guys.
It, man.
You know, I think Boise State is going to get that bye. I could be wrong, but I have a feeling. I would think Boise State over Arizona State.
Yeah,
Gets a bye in the playoff, something has to change. Something has to change. Scrap it, do something.
Yeah.
But I will not sit here and let this happen. I won't. Group of five shouldn't get in anyways. It's a participation trophy.
Here we go.
Thanks for being okay and good.
What an
elitist. The dumbest thing ever. Great call, though, Brett.
Yeah, Brett, I loved recruiting Bakersfield. You guys are tough as nails. Toughest part of California, if you ask me. All right, let's get to bets, then we'll get to donos. All right, last night, boys, 7 out of 8 got our bets.
Who missed the one?
7 out of 8.
That's pretty daggum good. Let's see if we can replicate it. I've been hot when it comes to the hardwood, and
A
joke.
Yes, you have.
I can't even try and say funny
things.
Say it
again for the camera.
UConn, -38 against East Texas A&M, State of Technologies and Culinary Arts tonight. Give me a UConn -38, -112. They were going to go a little maction. Northern Illinois, Miami, Ohio, over 43. If it's got Miami in it, I'm taking the over. That's at -110 tonight.
All right. Give me Akron -9.5. That's -125 on the odds. Going on the road and playing Kent State. And then go ahead and give me Miami of Ohio money line at home playing Northern Illinois. And that's -125.
I don't know
who
bet the Cowboys 7.5, but it definitely wasn't this guy over here. And that mustache looks phenomenal. Give me Western Michigan, CMU under 56.5, a little underplay there. Then I'm going to over in the Northern Illinois Miami Ohio game at 42.5. It's going off at -115.
Doesn't Blaine just look like he's trying to flip a Republican House seat in like Northern California? Can we go back to his picture?
I think I was almost like one show today.
Like, look at this. This guy, I think would win. I think he would win.
That face is votable right there. You'd vote for that.
I think you could. I know you, so I definitely wouldn't vote.
Right, couldn't pass an audit,
not at all.
Like, we just split District 9. Blaine Crane ran on not having men in women's sports.
Yeah, we believe in child separation.
Here we go. Western Michigan, -5.5. That's at -112. And then Akron Kent State under 49.5. I like that at -110. Great call by Ace yesterday. there will be a touchdown.
That happened. Under a yard and a half. Joe Mixon from the one.
When he got tackled, I looked at Reed and started laughing. I had no idea why.
You realize if you would have taken Joe Mixon first touchdown, last touchdown, the odds you
what
would have
What were the odds?
They were insane. They were like plus 2,500.
Wow.
Like just absolutely insane. It would have been a crazy bet, man.
It'll never happen again.
At the end of the day, all right, if you donated any, guys, thank you so much. Let's get to these. $10 donation from Peyton Williams. Thank you, Peyton. You should want to play in your championship game, mm-hmm. but if you're going to punish someone for losing, they need to punish teams like Notre Dame for not even playing in one.
But then they'll say they will,
they
Peyton.
They shouldn't be higher than nine.
Then they'll say they will because they can't get a bye, and that's why they did it that way, which I don't like anyways, but that's me. I'm with you. I just think we got to live in reality if you're one of these teams. We talk about this in college basketball all the time. How many times do you hear teams, because we have a regular season champ and then you have a conference tournament,
which
right?
Which I hate.
How many times have we seen teams that have won the regular season or even in the SEC finished second or third that are like, God, to be honest with you, I hope we get knocked out first game of the conference tournament so we get more time to rest up for the NCAA tournament. We've already seen this, but since it's college basketball and you have two different championships, it kind of tastes different.
But this whole business about not wanting to go play in your conference championship at 10-2, here's what it does, though. If you think that you're just automatically going to make the playoff at 10-2 because you're sitting home not playing in the conference championship, then guess what? That opens up the door for Notre Dame again. Yeah. So I don't want to hear you complaining that Notre Dame doesn't play in a conference and they don't have to risk it conference championship week. And all of a sudden, well, of course, Notre Dame's out at 10-2. They don't play in a conference. Why? Why are they out at 10-2 when Ole Miss or Tennessee or Alabama is sitting at home in 10-2 and not playing in the conference championship? So you want to open that door, Notre Dame's back in the conversation at 10-2.
Let's go to a $3 donation from I'm Horned Up. Appreciate it, man. He says, I need the Auburn Tigers to take care of business this weekend, fellas. I bereave in you.
Well, I'm glad you bereave. can I just really quickly, I am so tired of Auburn having to rely on the magic of Jordan Hare lately. Like, we've used up the magic.
Use what you got.
We don't deserve any more magic. You know when you deserve the magic? When you have a good team and it gives you that extra ump. The prayer in Jordan Hare. The kick six. Two really good Auburn team that just needed to use the magic. We have pumped all the magic out of the magic pump in Jordan Hare because our team is god-awful on offense when it comes down to it. So we have totally tapped that resource. I forgot what movie it is where they use all the magic. All of a sudden, the magic dries up. And now, if you got to rely on magic, then go to Hogwarts. Line your ass up and win the game. Play good. How about play good? That's all I'm asking. I'm so sick of having to just only rely on that.
Let's go to a $5 donation from Reggie. Appreciate it, man. It says, guys, why is it so hard for some quarterbacks to make touch passes? This is in reference to the Beck pass to a wide-open Lovett in the end zone. Mm.
Well, it's just like some guys can shoot threes better and some guys are better when they drive. I mean,
some guys can throw the fastball, not the slider.
That's exactly right.
Let's go to a $5 donation from CD. Says, if Blaine will do the rocket cheer correctly, I will donate $50.
What is?
I believe that has something to do with Army, if I am correct. CD, give me a night, right? Give me a night tomorrow.
Yeah,
I'll show up.
Do some research.
For a $50 dono, I'll do about anything. All right, let's go to a $5 donation from TJ. Says, hot take. Notre Dame shouldn't get higher than a 9 seed. Just get into a conference.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference in, 9-5? I know you can host a game. I guess there is a difference.
Last donation of the day, $5 donation from the Bengal Boys says, guys, I hate Brian Kelly.
All right, well, we appreciate your honesty. What about the poll?
Another $5 donation from RJ says, Blaine, the Don Crane. Appreciate that, brother.
Don't encourage him.
If Ohio State comes up short, do you think Ryan Day gets let go? I'd fire him.
He might leave on his
own. I'd fire him.
Blaine would be the worst.
You pay $20 million to lose to Indiana.
Blaine would be the worst AD.
You pay $20 million to lose to Indiana.
You could win three national championships.
You'd be the head coach. I'll do it myself.
I'll do it myself.
I'm going to be the AD and the head coach.
Well, I won't take a salary.
You think Jerry Jones was bad.
Oh, yeah. That's why I was just laughing when he
talked about the Cowboys. We're either winning or nuking everything.
Yeah, Blaine is either you release the hostages.
Talk about World War III, man.
All right, let's get this poll. Do conference championships matter, fellas? Yes or no?
Yes. What do you say? What's
99%. That one sicko in there because I know Lane watches the show.
I know it's 88%.
Yes, 63.
Wow.
Yes, 63%. They believe.
No, 37%.
I actually thought it'd be higher.
Another donation. $5 donation from the Truffle Shuffle. Says, who is Hugh Freeze going to blame this week after the Aggies handle business?
Probably me.
Probably Jake.
Yeah,
that's just your fault the whole
time. It'll be my fault.
That's who I'm.
It's always my fault.
Man, there's no magic.
Bruce Pearl's still pissed at me for getting mad about Auburn.
Is he still mad?
Bruce! Yeah!
He's still angry
about
that?
Yeah, they're still mad.
I'm mad!
No, David.
I'm mad. I had y'all winning the tournament.
David, I got phone calls about that. Just for pointing out that Auburn has to start coming through when it comes to postseason play in football, basketball, and baseball.
Why won't you go coach special teams, man? Like, you're just letting the team down. That's why they're mad at you.
So they got Magoo out there trying to get kicks at Auburn. Dude.
Yeah, yeah, you got Towns McSlice out there just shanking and yanking, man.
Meanwhile, the only way Auburn can win is with Texas's kicker.
Shanking and yank. I got a kickoff return for him. Explode, left, laser. Yeah. All right, we appreciate you guys. Shout out to Black Rabbit Coffee, Good Rancher, Shopify. We appreciate y'all. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Great calls as usual today. Make sure you lock in tomorrow. And listen, I know you're probably going to be 13 flavors of piss when the playoff rankings come out tonight, but do I care anymore deep down? Yes, I do. But for right now, we're going.
God, I'm in his head. Oh, I'm swimming in it. Rent free.
Gone. Get out.
Rent free.
Get out. Get out. No, the rent's due. It's $12.